Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf now. Makes me smile every time it catches my eye. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. I got Adam Morrow on the phone. That's good. He's a reporter for Interpress Service at ipsnews.net. How's it going, Adam?
It's going okay. How's it going, Scott?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you joining us again. Of course, you're reporting from Cairo, Egypt right now.
Yeah, that's correct.
It's kind of important to mention, you know, when I'm asking you what's going on in Egypt, that you're there.
Fair enough.
Through the magic of electronic technology these days, I got you on the phone with hardly a delay. It's just great.
Yeah, that's
Tell
incredible.
Me this, Adam. How's the restoration of democracy going?
The restoration of democracy is going poorly in Egypt, unfortunately. I don't know, what are the main headlines? If I can be a little bit selfish, what are the sort of the main headlines that are coming to you guys in the States right now about Egypt? I mean, is it mostly constitution stuff? Is it, an occasional protest that breaks out in Tahrir Square? I mean, what sort of news are you, what's dominating the headlines from Egypt for American audiences?
The only thing I've seen in forever is that Hegel called Sisi and said, hey, be a little bit nicer, and I hope you hold some elections at some point or something. But other than that, you know, I guess I wouldn't call it a blackout, but it's kind of a brownout anyway. It's certainly not covered on TV at all. And if there's a big protest, nothing. There's some coverage of some young ladies, quite a few of them, I believe, being prosecuted for protesting in pro-Muslim Brotherhood protests against the military dictatorship.
Oh, okay, that's being reported, though. That's something, okay.
But it is far from, you know, a big cause like Pussy Riot in Russia or something like that, you know what I mean?
Right, of course.
Nothing
of course.
Like that, because we're on the other side. We're on the dictatorship side in this one. by the way, it's been since was it the beginning of June or the beginning of July when the dictators overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood? Now June, right?
It was July 3rd the military coup, and then June 30th were the mass of the beginning of the mass demonstrations that came out.
Right.
And then 3 days later, you had him declaring, basically removing Morsi, and not just removing Morsi, but arresting all of the leaders of the Brotherhood and their legal political party and all of this sort of thing. So it's been 5 months, actually. It's been 5 months, remarkably. Hmm.
So under the Mubarak regime, they tolerated the Muslim Brotherhood, not that they let them have majority power in the parliament or anything like that. Or any
they
real power, but they
them,
let them
they,
be they, them, right? But now the,
they, well,
the organization is
outlawed,
is that correct? Or just the political party?
Under Mubarak, they were formally outlawed, but they still were allowed to field candidates in parliament on an independent basis, which was kind of a weird compromise that the two forces reached. And as we know, under Mubarak, all of the elections were famously and known to be rigged. But that didn't stop the Brotherhood from, in 2005, in the first round of parliamentary elections in 2005, Mubarak, in what people sort of believe was sort of a way of letting America know, because there was a lot of pressure at that time for democratization. If you remember, there was a lot of pressure, whether or not it was sincere, that was coming out of Washington at the time, sort of pushing these Arab. It was post Iraq, so there was a lot of calls for democratization in the region and that sort of thing at that time. So So what Mubarak did was he actually let the first round of parliamentary elections in 2005. He let them open. He didn't fix them. He let them just sort of go. And in that first round of elections alone, the Brotherhood picked up 88 seats or something like that. Picked up this huge number, and then they immediately began rigging. Or the next three rounds of elections, they immediately rigged, and they sort of caught them at night, let them get 90 seats of parliament. So my point being, they were actually a parliamentary force even under Mubarak, even though they were outlawed. So you have the situation where they were formally outlawed, but they were allowed to contest elections, sometimes quite successfully, as long as they ran on an independent ticket and didn't call themselves a Muslim Brotherhood or a Muslim Brotherhood party.
All right, now those days are long over now, and the organization itself is outlawed.
It's become existential. Oh, yeah. Now the battle has become existential. Now you've got, massive crackdowns. You've got the killing on August 14th. If you remember, there was a big sit-in. In the month and a half after the coup, you had tens of thousands of Islamist Morsi supporters, but possibly even hundreds of thousands. It's indeterminate, impossible to tell exactly how many people would flock to Rabah al-Adawiyah Square in Cairo. And they stayed there. They managed to sort of hold the fort there for about six weeks. And they were actually being visited. When they were there, they were being visited by foreign delegations and foreign diplomats and stuff like that, which was really freaking out the new, you know, the new powers that be, the new military backed rulers. So they had to do away with that. And on August 14th, they went in and they completely cleared it, and killed upwards of, looks like something like 800-900 people. Really, really, really vicious. I mean, unprecedented in Egypt's modern history, anything like that. And ever since then, you've had these daily protest demonstrations. It's never gotten as bad as, you've had occasional massacres since then. It's on a much smaller scale. But until now, you continue to have this dynamic where every day you're seeing quite large, quite substantial protests in all different parts of Cairo. I mean, I'm looking at some right now from Gazira's live channel that's covering some of the live ones coming in from the provinces. Every day, I mean, without fail, every day. And in some cases, apparently, they're drawing larger and larger crowds. You're getting, you know, I'm sure you've seen, it's not just Islamists anymore, but you've now got massive student groups. You've probably seen coverage of some of this. You've got massive student demonstrations that are taking place. Two or three days ago, you had an engineering student getting killed during one of these demonstrations when police intervened to sort of break it up with tear gas and shotguns, and one of these kids got killed, and that just sort of, you know, galvanized the whole university, you know, the whole student movement. And you've been seeing larger and larger campus demonstrations every day, again, all over the country, in Upper Egypt, in the universities in Upper Egypt, and some of the universities in the canal cities like Suez and Ismailia, and then Cairo University, of course, Ain Shams University, which is in Cairo. And Al-Azhar University actually has seen the most, although nothing has happened in the last week or two, the Al-Azhar University has actually seen the most violent sort of clashes. And you've also, at the same time, you've also seen these incredibly harsh sentences being handed down on pro-Morsi demonstrators. One example being the girls you mentioned. I mean, you're talking about these girls, most of them are in their early 20s. They're all wearing the hijab, you know. They're obviously, you know, these like incredibly harmless girls who are out joining at a pro-Morsi protest, and they were all rounded up in October, and they were charged with these ludicrous charges like blocking roads and attacking pedestrians and inciting violence and things like that, and received 11 years in prison each. That was just about 5 or 6 days ago. And you probably saw pictures of them, and that caused a tremendous backlash as well, specifically against the judiciary, which, as you know from earlier conversations, this remains Mubarak's judiciary. You know, the judiciary was never touched in the 3 years since the January 25th revolution. The judiciary remains as it was under Mubarak. So people are outraged over that, but the status quo remains intact for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like they have anybody really to rally around, so what are they going to do about it? They can be upset, but all they can do is just go out and protest and get bashed over the head themselves, basically, right?
Yeah, exactly. Although, that being said, though, in the last couple of weeks, it does look like the coup leaders and such have sort of have kind of lost control. One thing that most people, you know, there's consensus about at this point is that they never imagined when they planned this whole thing, they never imagined that the reaction was going to be as big and as persistent as it's proven to be. Now, like we said, we're 5 months since the July 3rd coup, and you still have people taking to the streets in massive numbers. They, you know, this is something that they're desperately trying to downplay in the media, and both the private, all of the private media in Egypt, as well, obviously, all of the state media, is all entirely pro-army. It does not vary from the army line at all. Does not move out of lockstep. Again, both the private and the public media here do not move out of lockstep with the military. These protests and the crackdown on the brotherhood that we've seen since the coup are constantly being portrayed on television and in the media as a war against terrorism. They basically adopted the whole American post 9/11. War on terror sort of thing. It's kind of gross. It's kind of gross after having lived through that for so long post 9/11, all the, you know, the overplaying of the whole terrorist thing.
Sure.
To see it play out in an Arab country, you know, in an actual Arab country where the actual regime is starting to employ that kind of the same sort of language and that same kind of extremely simplistic outlook where it's the, you know, this us versus them sort of stuff that came out after 9/11.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the parallel would be if, you know, all the Republican rhetoric about how anyone who was against their war agenda, most of whom were either Democrats or leaning left one way or the other during those early post 9/11 years there under George W. Bush, they called everybody a terrorist or a terrorist sympathizer, this, that. But it was just a smear.
Well, yeah.
It's not like they waged the war on terror against a hell of a lot of innocent Iraqis, but they didn't like outright unleash the army and the Secret Service on the American people in that sense, you know, acting like they really meant it, rounding up Democrats just for being Democrats and basically calling them traitors, something like that. I mean, this is way out of control if you put it in that context.
You have the same dynamic. You have the same dynamic playing out here, but like on steroids, you know, where very, very quickly it began with the Rabah al-Adawiyya massacre that I mentioned earlier. If you remember, that was the first time that a major crack appeared in the whole new ruling structure was when Baradei and one other guy resigned. If you remember that, they were all firm supporters of June 30th. They were all supporters of the military coup. But when the security forces moved in and killed all those people, killed all those mostly unarmed demonstrators on August 14th, Baradei resigned, as did another major figure in their coalition. And that was kind of the first sort of show of dissent. And from what I understand they're only becoming more hawkish, you know. I mean, there's talk about a looming cabinet reshuffle in which people who have, you know, anybody who's even floated the idea of reconciliation with the Brotherhood should be excluded. And this whole idea of accusing people of being with the Brotherhood, this has been going on since Morsi was in the presidency. Everybody that he would appoint would be accused somehow of being a Brotherhood sleeper cell or something like that. Anybody who showed any kind of sympathy, anybody who was willing to work with them, was accused by some quarters, was accused by the most extreme quarters of being a secret Brotherhood cell, to the point where Sisi himself, when he was appointed defense minister by Morsi, was actually accused of, if you remember, when Morsi got rid of the old guys, Tantawi and Anen, the two former chiefs of the Supreme Military Council, he replaced them with Sisi, who became the defense minister. And Sisi himself was accused by some quarters of being a secret Brotherhood agent, you know, simply by virtue of the fact that Morsi had appointed him. So this whole thing about accusing anybody who steps out of line, you know, anybody who suggests a moderate course, anybody who suggests, you know, hey, maybe we shouldn't, like, annihilate the entire Islamist current in Egypt, anybody like that is prone these days in the current environment, you know, in this current rabidly pro-army, very, very jingoistic environment. Anybody who moves out of lockstep a little bit is, and we've seen a lot of resignations. You've had a lot of respectable people, people who didn't buy into it, people who were too intelligent to buy into it, and people who had too much integrity to buy into it, journalists and that sort of thing, sort of leaving their positions at newspapers and stuff like this, and watching newspapers that had once been, you know, at least had a veneer of respectability, just turn into total pro-army rags, you know, almost overnight.
Yeah. Well, now, so what about this being a self-fulfilling prophecy? And, you know, I mean, it's not hard to imagine that the average young, irate Muslim Brotherhood supporter or supporter of what used to be the Muslim Brotherhood might find himself agreeing with Ayman al-Zawahiri that I guess the Muslim Brotherhood were a bunch of suckers for thinking they could play the West's democracy game and that a legitimate election would mean anything. The Americans are always going to insist on military dictatorship, and so jihad and all of that crap, right? I mean, and in fact, as long as you're going there, why not do that on purpose if you're the military dictatorship? Go ahead and make real enemies out of these guys. Get a few suicide bombings to happen or whatever, and then you can have a real-ass war, you know, like Assad.
Well, look, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I mean, there have been, along with these peaceful demonstrations that have been going on a daily basis, there have also, there's also been a huge upswing in violence, which we've also, we spoke about a bit in our last conversation. There have been these regular attacks on police and army personnel, some of them quite spectacular, some of them quite brazen, most of them in the northern Sinai Peninsula, but there have also been attacks, in Egypt proper. Those have kind of slowed down over the last week or two. There haven't been so many. They're isolated reports. There hasn't been anything too big. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that, just because, I mean, it's not like these, and again, the relation, needless to say, the pro-army media and army spokesmen will immediately assume a direct link between, you know, the Brotherhood and these attacks going on. Meanwhile, the pro-Morsi people will sort of distance, the Brotherhood will sort of distance themselves from these facts, saying, look, we're not responsible, which is entirely possible. Who exactly is responsible still remains sort of, you know, still remains very much open to question. You know, the pro-army people will try to draw a connection with Hamas in the Gaza Strip, which doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Most of those accusations don't hold up to any scrutiny. They just don't make any sense.
Please go ahead and segue into Gaza all you like, too, please, sir.
Well, if you want to talk about Gaza specifically, we can. I mean, what happened, the July 3rd coup was a huge blow to Hamas, which is in a serious bind right now, because not only has it lost its big ally to the south, which was Morsi, and you remember the Mubarak regime had a very antagonistic relationship with Hamas, and Morsi's victory in elections in 2012 would have totally changed the equation for Hamas, which is now doubly isolated as well because they've sort of lost their home base in Syria as well. What's going on in Syria has also cost them their home base in Syria, so they're sort of stuck there. But I wanted to go back to Egypt just for a second, because one of the big sort of changes in U.S. policy. You were saying how it just hasn't been covered that much in the media over there. It's just interesting. When Kerry, about a week ago, yes, did you even catch this? What he said, he came out and basically said that the Brotherhood had stolen the January 25th revolution, which was pretty radical.
I did not realize that he had doubled down on his claim that this is the restoration of democracy here. I was, of course, mocking him with my first question for you there. His statement that a military nullifying an election indefinitely is the restoration of democracy. But I guess if democracy means you do whoever in question does exactly what the U.S. State Department says they better do, then I guess it is democracy. Most people don't understand the term in that sense. But they did not cover that, as far as I know. I didn't see any coverage of that.
Yeah, that was big news here. But what's remarkable is not only did he praise Egypt's new military-backed rulers, But he also accused the Brotherhood of stealing the January 25th Revolution, which I think is kind of dangerous because, I mean, if anything, they played the game. You know, they can't be accused of having rigged elections or anything like that. You know, you've got your usual complaints that people make here, like they deceived people by using religion and mixing religion and politics. You know, all these sort of tired old accusations against the Brotherhood. But in terms of, you know, technically running an electoral campaign and, you know, sort of fielding candidates and, you know, all of this sort of stuff. I mean, they played the game and they won, you know. You know, if you could chalk it up to the lack of competition, you could chalk it up to the fact that none of their political rivals had their acts together, you know, one iota, which would be true. But nevertheless, they played the game. You know, they haven't been involved in any sort of violent activity since the 1950s. There haven't, you know, they've denounced violence for like more than 50 years. They played the game and they won all these elections, and then Morsi was overthrown, and their democratically elected parliament, which they had dominated, was summarily dissolved in 2012 by the military as well. People forget that as well, that they lost a full parliament as well as a presidency. So that brings us back to the thing that you said earlier, the question you had earlier about, you know, these like aggrieved young, you know, Muslim Brotherhood guys. Are they gonna come around to this idea that they've been hearing that democracy doesn't pay off and that it's, you know, violence and jihad are the only means to accomplish their ends and that sort of thing? I mean, what conclusion would you draw if you were one of them? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if I was
maybe not that one, but I can certainly understand where they'd be coming from. Yeah, and
Obviously
what Kerry means, and this is obvious, maybe, you know, you're saying the dictatorship has an iron grip on the media and all that, but for anybody else in the world who's not American, they know that all Kerry means is they stole it from us. They stole it from the people that we wanted to win, which was the young and liberal and malleable, who, you know, and in fact, even that was really their second choice, of course. What they really wanted was Omar Suleiman, and even then they only wanted him, and he was the head of the secret police rendition division, but they only wanted him after they finally gave up on doing everything they could to keep Mubarak. I mean, hell, Ronald Reagan told Ferdinand Marcos, you gotta go, pal, but Barack Obama did everything he could to keep Mubarak in power as long as he could, and then he said, okay, let's have the head of the secret torture police in, and then when that didn't work, they said, okay, well, let's try to get the young April 6th movement types. They'll do what they're told or whatever. But as you say, they weren't prepared. The Muslim Brotherhood, at least, as we were talking about, they have a history. And they at least they're a known quantity to the people of Egypt. And they were just in the catbird seat. They inherited the revolution. It was never going to be the young liberals, not in a fair fight. And not even with the CIA bankrolling them either, you know?
Right. Yeah, people have to remember that all through the Mubarak regime, they you know, all through the long Mubarak era, they really were the only real opposition force. You know, they were the only.
Well, they got to remember too that they're actually, and I don't know everything about them, but from what I do know about them, I disagree with them on just about everything. They're pretty much hardcore right wing conservatives, but they're not bomb throwing radical terrorists. They're conservatives
by definition.
They're old enough and rich enough to want to keep what they have. It's like a Republican, maybe a real right-wing one.
Right. Well, the socialists here accuse them of being neoliberal economists and all of this sort of thing.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm sure they're going to love the economy as it grows into more and more military control from here. I mean, this is something we've been talking about for 2 years now, about how. What, some huge percentage of the economy, more than half, is in the hands of the military in the first place, and that never changed. The deep state never went away. That was why it's so easy for them to take the whole thing back.
Right. Hey, Scott, I just want to mention also really quickly, just because it kind of could be relevant.
Yeah, we got to go real quick, so make it quick.
Right before what Kerry said, what he said, a major Russian delegation came to Egypt, and there's been a lot of talk right now about Egypt shifting its alliances, basically from alliance and dependence on the U.S. to more of dependence on Russia, which apparently is like really, really open to the idea to offset the losses it's taking in Syria.
Yeah, but who's going to pay him $3 billion a year to pretend to not hate Israel? Russia? Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, that's true. Well, with help with the Gulf. Help from some friends in the Gulf.
Right. Yeah, I guess the Saudis can make up the shortfall. All right, we got to go. Thanks very much, Adam. Great to talk to you again.
Take care, Scott.
All right, y'all, that's the great Adam Morrow from IPSnews.net. We'll be right back.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. As you may already be aware, Jacob Hornberger, Sheldon Richmond, and James Bovard are awesome. They're also in every issue of The Future of Freedom, and they're joined by others of the best of the libertarian movement. People like Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Lawrence Vance, Joe Stromberg, and many more. Even me. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom, edited by Sheldon Richmond at fff.org/subscribe. And tell me heard it here. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing. It's that America is on the wrong track. In The War State, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire. The permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. Or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at libertystickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at libertystickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at thebumpersticker.com. Libertystickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Fact. The new NSA data center in Utah requires 1.7 million gallons of water every single day to operate. Billions of Fourth Amendment violations need massive computers and the water to cool them. That water is being supplied by the state of Utah. Fact. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution which requires your state to help the feds violate your rights. Our message to Utah? Turn it off. No water equals no NSA data center. Visit offnow.org.